In an interview videotaped by the New York Times, Jerry Sandusky not only repeats his denials of wrongdoing, he tells the paper youngsters in his Second Mile program, quote, might say I was a father figure. A father figure who stands accused of 40 counts of raping and molesting young boys.
Aaron is 18, but was just 11 when he first met Sandusky, after he was invited to a summer camp for the coach's charity, the Second Mile. Sandusky soon targeted him, showering the boy with special attention, pulling Aaron out of school during the day, sleepovers at his home on weekends. It was there in his basement that Sandusky victimized Aaron.
But you weren't able to say,
no.
This guy is a monster. He's sexually assaulting me.
I couldn't do it.
Why?
Embarrassment. Fear of not being believed.
That fear kept Aaron silent for years.
Hello and welcome to Real Crime Profile. It's Lisa Z from RCP here. So today, Jim and I pick up where we left off last week, discussing the child sexual abuse crimes committed in and around Penn State University by serial pedophile, former assistant football coach Jerry Sandusky, and also the aftermath of his conviction as it pertains to other officials at the school, including head football coach Joe Paterno. Laura couldn't join us in this discussion because, as most of you know, she's off fighting the good fight in the UK. But when Jim and I left off, we were debating the definition of the word predator and whether we should or should not use it to refer to child sex abuse offenders. Our talk, as usual, got very intense and very interesting from there on out. So one side note about the sound, you know, as many of you noticed in episode 122 with Sarah Azari and 123 from last week, the sound has had some echoes to it, and we've done our best to clean it up. That's because those episodes, as well as today, were all recorded on the same day with that same darn glitchy mic that made a terrible echo that we didn't know about until it was too late. So poor Paul, he's had to stay up all night, many, many hours, manually going virtually second by second to clean out the tracks and try to get rid of the echo as best he could and get a better sound quality. So today's episode is much better sounding than it was, but we hope you understand. And we're still sure that you're going to want to hear part two of Jim and my discussion. On a personal note, I wanted to dedicate this episode to Aaron Fisher and all of the other brave, brave victims who came forward to face Jerry Sandusky at trial. Because of you, many, many other children were saved from his abuse. And from the bottom of our hearts, we thank you. So now let's jump back into our conversation.
I don't. I have been for two decades trying to get people to stop using the word predator because it misleads people in the community. It misleads children. If you say, be wary about predators, kids are never going to look at the guy that you just dropped them off at school to be their teacher or to be their priest or to be their coach or to be their cop or their FBI agent or anything.
I think you can teach children that a predator comes in disguises. Well, I think that you can. And we're not yelling at each other, guys.
No, we're not. We're just being very...
We're being passionate.
So, predator, according to Google Dictionary, says an animal that naturally preys on others, or a person or group that ruthlessly exploits others. So, wolves are major predators of rodents, and a website frequented by sexual predators. Those are their samples. And I have been trying to get people to take that out of the lexicon, because again, I believe... If you focus on predators, you will miss the smiling, wonderful appearing people that are actually victimizing your own children. And that happened with Nassar. It happened with Sandusky. It happened with thousands of others that preceded them. And this is the truth. It will happen with thousands of others that are going on right now that you don't know. They're right there in your schools, in your groups, in your teams, in your communities, in your homes, possibly. You have to be open to the fact that somebody who is a sexual offender, who's a preferential sex offender, who is sexually attracted to children, will find ways to ingratiate themselves to you and to your children and to your community and to your organizations and to your teams and make you think that they're a wonderful person and that all their interest in children is altruistic when, in fact, they're sexually aroused by children, they want to have sex with children, they will use grooming techniques. taking care of them, being kind to them, loving them, showing them affection, spending time with them, giving them opportunities, all those kinds of things, giving them gifts, bribing them. And in fact, some of them actually will seduce them. And so all those things are aspects of grooming that will then end up in this child quietly not disclosing the fact that they're being sexually victimized by these nice guy, nice gal, acquaintance offenders.
They're very good at what they do. They're the best actors that I've ever seen.
Yeah, and I would put Jerry Sandusky at the top of the list because he did this for decades, and he did it in such a profoundly open way. Talk about hiding in plain sight. This guy paraded children after children after children. But let me tell you why I believe they didn't know, why I believe it. Not only did Joe Paterno's kids shower with Jerry Sandusky, but Joe Paterno and all the other coaches and all the other administrators for decades saw Jerry Sandusky with his arm around boys, hugging boys, wrestling with them.
It was normalized then.
Not just normalized, but the fact is that not a single one of those boys in all those years said, Jerry Sandusky sexually victimized me. Even the boy in 1998 said, no, he didn't do anything wrong. But he obviously felt uncomfortable. He didn't do anything sexual to this child, according to the child. So what they didn't understand is compliant victimization. The fact is that grooming results in compliant victimization. Grooming makes a kid keep silent because they're getting other things that they really want and need. Just the fact that they look up to this guy and he's giving them access to these amazing things. They want to be
especially
silent.
Especially in that town.
Yes.
That's the biggest thing that
of
you
course.
Can do.
Of course. So Jerry used that whole mystique, that whole access thing to get these poor kids who have nothing to put up with him sexually victimizing them. He did horrible things to them. Yeah, it's terrible. It's terrible. But I believe that the people around him actually believed he was a good person because he was a good person in every other aspect other than the fact that he was trying to get access and authority and control over kids for sex. Everything else he did in his life seems to be on the surface very good, very altruistic. And he did, in fact, help hundreds of thousands of kids over those years that he didn't molest. But
yeah,
that doesn't make him better.
No, that's
it doesn't undo the fact that he's a horrific offender. But I believe he started offending in his late teens, early 20s, and he offended throughout those decades until he was arrested when he was 57 years old.
So let's nutshell the rest of it. So he does get in the movie they make a big deal out of the Cub reporter at the Patriot News, you know, and again, how many times do we see it's these journalists who out these, okay, I'm not going to say predators, who out these offenders.
These child sex offenders.
These child sex offenders. Without free press, I mean,
I agree.
People would keep going.
There's one slight detail, though, that the movie kind of missed.
Okay, well.
And that is that Sarah Ganim picked up a report by another reporter,
okay.
And he's actually the one who first brought it up.
Right, but like
I believe, and yeah. You know, we'll check this out.
Same thing with Larry Nassar case. I mean, in Spotlight and the RSIs, so many are coming from journalists and not law enforcement.
Right.
I mean, you know,
the problem, though, of course, is that you know, from my perspective, is that I think Sarah Ganim, although she did an amazing thing, that she didn't understand this field of child sexual victimization and grooming and other things. So she interpreted with an uneducated eye the behaviors of the school and the team and Paterno and others. And I believe that misled a lot of people in the public. And that is why a lot of people believe that a lot more horrific stuff went on. But the fact is that Jerry was indicted. He was prosecuted. Went to trial. Many of these victims came forward and testified. Incredibly brave souls. Thank you so much, guys, for doing that. I know how difficult it was. One of Jerry's adopted sons came forward, Matt Sandusky, during the middle of the trial and said that Jerry had molested him for years as well. And I praise these guys for the strength that they had to come forward. I know that when I finally came forward, I did it very quietly. I didn't go to the news. I didn't have to end up testifying at trial. And I was very happy I didn't have to go public about it because it was very, very difficult for me to deal with. So again, guys, you're my heroes.
You are.
And I really appreciate it. And, you know, so do the thousands and thousands of other survivors that I know that have, you know, that have seen what you did and really applaud you. And the millions, literally millions of other survivors, male and female, across this country and around the world who have endured things similar to what you have and you know, can't find their voice and or didn't get an opportunity. So thank you for doing what you did. But he was convicted of
40 counts of molesting hit boys.
45 counts, I believe.
Okay.
But what he wasn't convicted of was sodomizing victim number two in the shower because apparently the jury did not believe McQuarrie. Why? Because he changed his story so many times. McQuarrie is a very commanding presence. When he testified, he said he was 6'4 and a quarter, something I never hear from anybody over 3 years old. Quarter inch? I mean, come on. I mean, that's just so ridiculous. Yes. But that's McQuarrie. But he had changed his story a number of times, and he did not. He absolutely did not tell Joe Paterno or Schultz or Curley that he saw Jerry Sandusky anally penetrating that child. But he would testify to that in trial. And apparently the jury didn't believe him because they acquitted Jerry Sandusky of those charges. And that's an important point, as well as when Schultz, Curley, and Spanier were prosecuted, Schultz and Curley pled guilty to endangerment of a child. But they did not plead guilty to any kind of conspiracy, in although they were charged with it, to allow Jerry to continue molesting. And when Spanier went to trial, he was charged with both the conspiracy counts and the endangerment, and he was acquitted on the conspiracy counts. So even though Louis Free sent his report that there was a continuing conspiracy tied with Jerry Sandusky was doing to protect the football program, the actual criminal investigation, the actual criminal trials actually found the opposite. There was no conspiracy. There was no joining up of minds and plans to let Jerry continue to do what he was doing and to try to bury it to protect football. That was completely and wholly unsupported by the evidence.
So you don't think that they are guilty of child endangerment?
No, they two of them pled guilty to child endangerment, and one of them was convicted of child endangerment. They are, in fact, by the law, guilty of child endangerment. But the child endangerment was the fact that they didn't, in their positions of authority, they didn't, even though there were children on their campus, do anything to educate themselves so that they would see these red flags and they would be able to address it properly. I believe that's child endangerment. That's reckless endangerment of those children. I do not believe that they deliberately did it. And the reason why is because there's no evidence that they deliberately did it. If there were evidence, then I would say, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But the notes they took contemporaneously with these meetings that they kept show words like horsing around. And that, to me, is consistent with what they said. And so I have to just go with the evidence as opposed to theorizing, especially since I know how good Sandusky was at grooming. And I know I've literally dealt with thousands and thousands of other great groomers. One of the very first cases that we did regarding the with the internet and child sexual exploitation when I was on the joint FBI NYPD sexual exploitation of children task force was a guy who was an ABC personality. And this guy was sexually victimizing kids and people did not believe it. And when his little brother from Big Brothers reported him, they pulled him out of the program. They got a letter from social services saying, you better reinstate this guy. They didn't believe it. And they made him stay with this offender. And he continued to sexually victimize him. But because he was a personality, he was bigger than life, he was so dynamic, they were like, how could you possibly defame this man in this way? And they put him back with the offender, this child victim back with the offender. And he had nobody protect him. So I do believe it. I've seen it personally happen tens of thousands of times. And I know that it's happened literally multiple millions of times in this country. And I think everybody should wake up and understand that 1 in 4 children will be sexually victimized. And 90+% of them will be sexually victimized by someone they know and love and trust. So question everybody who wants to spend alone time with your child. Why isn't another adult wanting to spend alone time with your child? Question babysitters, teachers, friends, relatives, cops and FBI agents. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what their profession is. It doesn't matter who they are to you. Anybody who is alone with your child could potentially be sexually victimizing them. Scrutinize every one of them.
No, I'm not attracted to boys. That's not the truth, because I'm attracted to young people, boys, girls.
Yeah, but not sexually. You're attracted because you enjoy spending time.
Right. I enjoy. That's what I was trying to say. I enjoy spending time with young people. I enjoy spending time with people. I mean, my two favorite groups are the elderly and the young.
So this piece of shit goes to jail, as he should, and he's still in jail, yeah?
Yeah.
Didn't lie yet? Okay.
Yeah.
But the story does not end there, because, you know, as we've been saying, this investigation goes. So tell what happens then.
So as a result of the conviction, Penn State, they decided to put up a fund to help victims, to compensate victims for what they went through. And their insurance company monitored this payout. And so the victims that came forward for the trial and other victims, a bunch of other victims, I think it got into the 20s or 29 or something, people came forward. And I have no doubt that Jerry Sandusky had far more than 29 victims over the course of what I believe was a 40-plus year offending career. But a couple of people that came forward and said that they were sexually victimized by Jerry Sandusky in the 70s. And two of them in particular said that they were sexually victimized and that they talked to Joe Paterno about it. And I have serious doubts. There's never been a real actual investigation into it, so I don't know the facts. But I have serious doubts as to the credibility of that, or that they, if they did talk to Joe Paterno, because they were both, I think, 15 years old at the time. One of them stated that he told his father, and his father said, "We're not going to call the police, but we're going to call Joe Paterno." And then he got on the phone with somebody named Joe and somebody named Tim, and that he was told, "Why are you making such outrageous allegations against, a great man?" And if that's the case, if that actually did happen, I can understand that, because just like in the case of Nassar, just like in the case of the ABC executive that I told you about before, people literally do not believe that a nice guy can actually be sexually attracted and is sexually assaulting children. Mm-hmm. And so we have to get over that. We have to use these cases to learn that it does happen. And so if any kid said that somebody who's an adult sexually assaulted them, investigate it. Don't convict somebody right away, but investigate it. Report it to the police. Make sure they investigate it. I mean, you can see in these cases over and over and over again when there's a failure of the system, when people get reported and then nobody believes them. Another guy who said that that he actually was at a football camp and he told one of the counselors that he wanted to talk to Joe Paterno, and the counselor said okay, and then he introduced him to Joe Paterno, who wasn't part of the camp but was walking through one day apparently, and that during the course of that walk, he said that he told Joe Paterno to his face, and Joe Paterno said he didn't want to hear about it. And that was it. So I don't know. I have a high degree of confidence that these guys were sexually victimized by Sandusky, but I don't know if I believe, 30, 40 years later, 50 years later, that they actually had a conversation at the age of 15 with Joe Paterno. Why is it so important that they told Joe Paterno about it? I just don't know. But one of them said, "I don't know if it was Joe, but I heard I was talking to somebody named Joe and I recognized the voice." Maybe.
Okay.
Anyway, it's unknown. And of course, they kind of threw that in at the end of the movie. But we want you to watch the movie.
Yeah, I think the movie is more, it raises question. It's probative, but I don't feel like it is conclusive. I think it leaves things open in a really interesting way. We'll get into that.
Right.
So I guess I'm just going to fast forward. So Joe Paterno is fired because why?
Well, he got fired. He got fired a couple of days after Jerry Sandusky got indicted and arrested for these crimes. And he was fired because there was at least the appearance to the Board of Trustees that Joe Paterno didn't do what he should have done about it. In fact, Joe testified in the grand jury. And we should put this in context, and we definitely should talk to Scott about this as well. But at the time, Joe was 84 years old, I believe, or 85. Joe had undiagnosed cancer. I've had undiagnosed cancer. They think maybe we got it. I was stage 4 when it was diagnosed, and and the doctor told me that I most likely had it for up to 2 years prior. Mm-hmm. And I know that in the 2 years prior, I eventually got so exhausted, so debilitated. I told my boss I really didn't want to travel as much. I was going to at least like 3 cities a week generally as an FBI agent, working child abduction cases and training law enforcement around the country and around the world. And I know what a toll it took on me at 44 years of age. Mm-hmm. Add 40 more years to that, and I'm sure that it took a serious toll on Joe Paterno. But he died 2.5 months later. So that's how close to death he was. And I know he was carrying around a pen and pad because he was forgetting things. And I know that he was, you know, participating in the football games from the booth as opposed to down on the sideline.
Movie produced, pretty amazing.
Yeah, and I don't know for sure. I want to ask Scott what the details of that was and why that was happening. But I also know Joe did a radio interview or attempted to, and he was kind of incoherent on it. You can listen to it on YouTube. But I know he was going through a lot of stuff at the time, and he would eventually pass away. And, you know, it was kind of terrible for him and his family because they took down a statue. They took names off of buildings and stuff. They just kind of made him a pariah.
It caused huge conflict within the college.
Yeah, well, there was a major riot, and police and news vans were overturned. And things were burned. And it was just terrible. And I think, and there was major sanctions placed against the school by the NCAA. And many of them, though, after my report and after this stuff was really looked at, many of those sanctions were removed. And Joe, I mean, they took the wins away from Joe Paterno since 1998 or something like that. And he was actually the winningest coach in college football history. And they took a bunch of those wins away from him. But I think those have been reinstated, as well as the scholarships and so forth for the school and the wins for the school.
It was a matter of it's a he said, he said type of situation. He says that he walked into that locker room and saw something happening and reported it. And Jerry Sandusky says that's not true. Now, Jerry Sandusky actually does have a witness that he intends to call to the stand at trial. A man who was a boy at the time in 2001 who says he is that alleged victim number two who was in that shower and says nothing bad happened, that it was a playful situation. It's exactly what Jerry Sandusky described as horsing around in the shower. He's expected to testify at trial. However, prosecutors say that doesn't necessarily mean that he is actually the boy who was in the shower that McCleary saw.
Okay. So I think we're going to wrap this up, but I want to tell you where I'm at right now.
Okay.
So I hear everything you're saying, and you know I value your opinion immensely. You know that.
You're allowed to have other opinions.
I'm almost off the edge, but I'm not quite, because I feel like, and I know that you'll make the distinctions that I'm not making yet. When we covered the Keepers, we came down like a fuck ton of bricks on the people who knew and looked the other way. When we covered Larry Nassar, we came down on U.S. gymnastics for
I know.
Probably
so can
knowing.
can we take each one of those?
But I just want to say that it's hugely hard for me to believe that they just didn't want to see it. They didn't want to know about it, that they knew in their gut what horseplay meant. They knew what it meant. How could grown men not know?
Because they don't work with kids and they didn't know. Remember, this was not, first of all, one of the biggest problems and one of the reasons why I talk about what happened to me so much and this topic so much is because people won't talk about this.
Yeah.
Especially with boys.
Yep.
Okay. When you, they literally, and they dealt with it in the movie. It literally equate a man sexually assaulting a boy to homosexuality. It's not homosexuality. In fact, most male offenders who offend against male victims still identify as heterosexual. They're still not homosexual. It's not about homosexuality. It's about the age difference. It's about the attraction to the childness of it. And many of these offenders will offend against boys or girls. There's a lot of crossover in gender. So let's go back to the Keepers. All right. What happened in the Keepers? What happened in the Keepers? The people who knew were people who were told by the victim that they were being sexually assaulted. They were the people who knew. That's knowing. It didn't happen in this case. It never happened in this case. In fact, it didn't happen until after Jerry Sandusky was convicted, with the exception of Aaron, number one. Nobody came forward, but he came forward. The first boy who came forward and said, I was sexually victimized by Jerry Sandusky, was in 2009. And it took the state attorney general 3 years to investigate that case and bring charge against Jerry Sandusky. Why? Because they hated kids? Because they wanted to put kids at risk? No, because Jerry Sandusky was that big of a deal. And in order to get this kid and actually convict him, they knew they had to get other victims. And that's what we teach people. When you're doing an investigation of this nature, in order to make it not one person's word against another, get as many victims as possible. Overwhelm the defendant. Go out there and find as many of the people that he actually victimized and then bring the case. And most of the time, they will plead guilty. But in this case, he went to trial. And all those kids had to testify and run through it again and again and again. So Aaron, superhero, because he came forward, he disclosed right away. They tried to deal with it. They were sidelined for so long. In fact, the school principal actually told him and his mother, before you report this to the police, you better go home and sleep on it before you destroy the reputation of such an honorable man. Exactly. But look at the flip side. Yes, that person now knows, has a direct allegation, contemporaneous, not 40 years in the past. And that person is wrong by that victim. That person had training and had a professional obligation and a legal obligation to report that. Now, let's back up. It may have been that same victim. I'm sorry, but I can't remember which name victim it was. But there was a victim there was a victim who would later report being molested by Sandusky, who was brought into the gym at night, and Sandusky was wrestling with them. One of the other wrestling coaches, an actual wrestling coach from the school, walked in late at night and thought, oh, why is this gym light on? And so he jumps, goes into the back gym and goes to turn off the light and then sees Sandusky in the corner. And Sandusky literally is laying on the ground next to this kid. And he goes up on one elbow and he turns and he's like, oh, yeah, I'm just showing him some wrestling moves. He's like, all right, well, make sure you turn the light off when you leave. And as this coach is leaving, he testified to this. He said, for a second, it crossed my mind, why is Jerry in the back gym with that kid? And are those really wrestling moves? Oh, wait a minute. This is Jerry Sandusky. He's a saint. What am I doing? That guy had a 13-year-old son and another son. He had a son the same age as this kid. And it crossed his mind. But the grooming wiped it out of his mind. It completely erased it. And he admitted that. He admitted that. And that's why I believe the other people too, because Jerry was so good. It overwhelmed this guy's sense of protection. So I just think we have to be honest with ourselves. People who are listening to this, I don't think if I asked anybody to raise their hand, if somebody they knew and had access to their kids or their family members was molesting kids. How many of you would actually raise your hand? I don't think any of you would, unless there's something that has an allegation that's come out recently or something. But the fact is, sadly, on average, one in four of you know somebody who's been victimized or is being victimized right now. That 25% of the population gets sexually victimized before they reach the age of 18, boys or girls. And that is an incredibly horrific statistic.
I think what I'm struggling with, Jim, is I feel like don't you feel like it can give people a pass to say, well, how could I have known? You know, he was so good. He fooled us all and nice guy. And you have this big case, you know, you have this big explanation about.
But they didn't know the explanation. That's the thing. They were unaware of the explanation. They were unaware that this type of person existed. They thought that in order to be a sex offender, you have to be a predator that I could recognize. And that's just not true. Stranger danger did good to a certain extent, but that's a tiny fraction. The kids who were sexually victimized by a stranger is a minute fraction compared to the kids who were victimized by somebody they know, trust, and love.
Well, I look forward to talking to Scott about this, and I'm sure you can understand why I didn't want to raise this with him.
I want you to raise that with him.
I feel like people know and they don't want it to be true. They just don't want it to be true, but they know and they think so little of children.
No, I don't think it's that. I really don't think it's that. They think so badly of sexual predators that they think they can recognize them.
Yeah.
Every babysitter that has molested a kid, every teacher, every spouse, every step parent, every coach, every organization leader, every neighbor that somebody knew and loved and trusted and gave their kids over to was somebody like this. And every parent who did that, who just wrenches, you know, their gut wrenches with the thought of that I gave this person access. I mean, the guy who, you know, whose karate instructor kidnapped his 8 or 10 year old son and took him on a cross country tour and when the police brought the guy back after they arrested him, brought the kid back, and then they arrested the guy and brought him back, the father actually went to the airport with a revolver and shot the guy in the head. Why? Because he knew he was the one that brought the kid to the karate lessons in the first place. He blamed himself, and that was his lashing out because he was so fucking overwhelmed by what he had brought into his son's life. I unfortunately have dealt with literally thousands of parents who've gone through this in cases that I've done over the course of my career. It's terrible. It haunts them, you know, and they really meant the best for their children, but they just didn't know this existed. So I'm trying to get people to understand. Lisa, I get it, but, and I don't want to use your kids as an example, but if you could picture somebody who has kids, who loves their children, but who works and so gives their kids to a nanny. And that nanny, as wonderful as that nanny is, male or female, could be doing the job because they want access to their kids. Why do you think nanny cams exist?
No, I know.
Right? Yeah. So, but it's not because they're not vigilant. It's not because they don't love their children. It's because they don't believe. It's somebody who's really nice, who you like as a person, somebody who you really want to hang out with and engage with, and they do such amazingly wonderful things, that person could also be sexually attracted to children. You have to get that into your head.
No, it's in my head. I know.
But the disbelief, yes, I understand that somebody could use that as an excuse. I absolutely believe that, and I believe it has happened at times. Okay. But I don't have any evidence of that in this case. Sure. And I do have amazingly convincing evidence that Jerry was an amazingly effective groomer, and he just literally, his affable personality and kind of goofiness, although to me it's a red flag, to them it was absolutely not. And you know, let's face it, how many billions of people in this world still believe Michael Jackson was not sexually attracted to children?
I've lost friends, people like it's so emotional about that one.
I know.
All right, we got it. What's up? Thank you, Jay Clem, for your patience
and talking to me. Thank you for asking all the questions, and I believe that you are, you know, truly disturbed by this case, and you should be, because these were kids that could have been saved, and they weren't because people weren't trained, and people didn't step forward, and people didn't, you know, do the right thing. And, you know, the number one offender is Sandusky. But to me, the number two offender is that janitor who saw him actually engaging in sexual assault of a child and didn't do anything because he was afraid of his job. Remember, Mike McQueary is a football player. He's 25 or 26 or 27 years old at the time, at the height of his career. Strength. He's 6'4" plus.
Yeah.
He's a football player, a massive guy. There's a 57-year-old who he believes in his mind is having anal sex with a 10 or 12-year-old, and he doesn't stop it. He slams his locker, break it up, please.
Mm-hmm.
You know, come on. So those guys didn't do what they should have done to stop Sandusky. Because of that, they threw their university, their team, and other people around them under the bus. But mainly, they threw these kids under the bus, the kids that we should be protecting at all costs. It is not a choice. We have to protect kids. They are vulnerable. They are very easily manipulated. It's why we have laws that protect them. Please get training.
And if you want to read Jim's findings again, you can go to www.paterno.com.
Yes.
Yep. And read Jim's report.
And if you don't have time to read the whole thing, please go to the last 9 pages, which is kind of a pullout section. It's an appendix that basically talks about grooming, nice guy acquaintance offenders, compliant victimization. And I really believe that it's something that you should share with your schools and your clubs and your sports and your communities, because this information will help you recognize the behavior of people that you know, love, and trust, who unfortunately are abusing that trust and taking advantage of your children.
Is there a documentary on Sandusky?
Happy Valley is a documentary. I think it's on Netflix. Mm-hmm. Although I'm part of it, I didn't know I was part of it. but apparently when I was shooting something else, they were also filming for this. And it's the story of Matt Sandusky, basically, and what else went on in Happy Valley, which is what they call College Park, Pennsylvania, where this all took place.
So if you get a chance to watch the HBO movie Paterno, it's like 2 hours or so, great. But you don't have to watch it in order to enjoy, you know, the talk that we're going to have with
Scott Paterno.
Scott Paterno.
And we're really looking forward to having Scott on.
Yeah, okay.
All right, well.
Wow, great. Okay. Thank you for listening to Real Crime Profile.
If you like our podcasts, there are a few things you can do. You can take 2 minutes and go to Apple Podcasts and leave a 5-star review. You can also check out all Real Crime Profile offers and promotions and our sponsors in our show notes. Another thing you can do is go to Facebook and like our Facebook page, and you can also follow us on Twitter at Real Crime Profile without the E. And one last thing, please tell your friends, family and colleagues about us and spread the Real Crime Profile word. Thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate all of our listeners.
Real Crime Profile is produced and edited by Paul Francis Sullivan. Sound engineering by Mike Thal. Music is composed by Simba Tsumba. Logo art by Jim Clementi. Real Crime Profile is produced by XG Productions and distributed by Wondery.
For advice and support if you're experiencing stalking in the UK, you can contact Paladin National Stalking Advocacy Service on 0203 866 4107, or you can go to the website where there's a lot of information and advice that you can follow on www.paladinservice.co.uk. If you're experiencing domestic abuse, you can call the National Domestic Violence Helpline for free on 0800 2000 247. In the US, if you're experiencing domestic abuse and need advice, shelter or counselling, you can call Genesis, the 24-hour hotline, on 214-946-4357. You can also go to their website for further advice or support, www.genesisshelter.org, And there's the domestic violence hotline on 800-799-7233.